This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 30th of September, 2016. Welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. The extracts we have for you this week have been edited by Liz and Gordon Legg. We'll begin with the usual regular notices, and the first is to say that if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And I'd just like to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And just one more reminder here for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's all lowercase, no spaces. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, find the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order. Most recent will be first on the list. And so on to this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Norma York, who is standing in for Claire Porter. Hello, Norma.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Gerry Taft.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter this week, Ros Lydiard. And on to the news. The leading headlines this week are homeless groups get £1 million bonanza, architects angry after council go back to the drawing board, and finally, prison failed hanged inmate. So that first headline story from Norma, please.
Homeless groups get £1 million bonanza. Two Winchester charities for the homeless have been given a huge boost thanks to £1 million windfall following the closure of a military charity. Winchester Church's Night Shelter and Trinity Winchester will each receive £500,000 to help people in need. The money has come from Deflog VQ Trust, set up by Brigadier Tom Blythe, whose son Ben was a client of both charities. The charity is closing and its assets will be distributed to other organisations. The gift is a testimony to the help, care and support that Brigadier Blythe's son, Ben, found in the city when he was homeless and suffering from a complicated and incurable mental health condition, which eventually led to his death by the railway in 2010 at the age of 33. A memorial bench on St Giles's Hill remembers him in the words, "Gentle, kind and generous. He touched many hearts and found great kindness in this city." Ben went to school in Dorset and to Peter Simmons College in Winchester before gaining an HND at college in Cheltenham. Education and subsequent working life was not easy and he fell victim to mental illness. For the final years of his life, Ben was homeless, at first in London and later in Winchester. Ben regularly refused hostel accommodation, medical intervention and government benefits, choosing to live a lifestyle where he was in control and able to make his own choices. After the harsh years on the streets in London, he found help, care and compassion from the charities in the city, including Night Shelter and Trinity. Speaking about the donation, Brigadier Blythe said, "Ben's story is very complex, yet it is shared by others who are homeless today. Some have a background in the armed forces. Many are desperate and damaged by mental illness, family breakdown, poverty and abuse. The trustees of Deflog VQ Trust and I are honoured to help Trinity Winchester and Winchester Church's Night Shelter to continue their work in the city. Operations Director of Trinity Winchester, Sue McKenna, said, "It has not been decided yet what we will spend the money on, but we want to do something different with the money, perhaps a project to help people move on. We're having discussions with the Night Shelter as well, because they receive the same donation. We want something that will help change help people's lives, as this is a life-changing donation. The Night Shelter is looking to increase and improve its services." Night Shelter manager Michelle Price said, "Ben was a delightful young man whose gentleness and kindness touched so many of the people who worked with him. His story shows how homelessness really can help happen to anyone. Sometimes severe mental illness puts people beyond the reach of even the strongest ties of family love and support. We are seeing a huge increase in the number of people affected by complex mental health issues, and if we can use this funding to alleviate that in some way, it would be a lasting tribute to Ben."
Architects angry after council go back to the drawing board. Architects have spoken of the damage the City Council has inflicted on itself over the collapse of the station approach scheme. They have criticised the way the council handled the scheme, which collapsed this summer when city councillors voted to start again from scratch. That left two shortlisted firms, Hopkins Architects from London and the local firm Design Engine, having invested six-figure sums for nothing. The architect's anger raises questions of whether other firms will want to risk working with the council in future. Kevin Warren, assistant director at the City Council, has written to firms, including several local ones, who expressed an interest in the competition. In a letter seen by the Chronicle, Mr. Warren wrote, "The council entered into a process of competitive dialogue with a design competition in good faith, in the belief and expectation that this would produce competitive, high-quality designs which would be appropriate for Winchester and this site in particular. However, the low score given by the design jury and the reaction of the council to the concept submissions suggests that there will be a need to make changes to the concept design in order to make it a design which the council is able to proceed with. The council will now be considering undertaking a new procurement exercise. I'd like to thank you again for your interest in this procurement and hope that this outcome will not deter you from bidding for any future contracts with the council." An architect at one of the firms who received the letter said he was unhappy that Mr. Warren appeared to be blaming architects who'd only followed the brief, which has been criticised as squeezing too much into the site. The architect, who asked not to be identified, said the letter seems to imply that the architect's response was flawed. The design concept received a low score, which is disingenuous to the architects and their design integrity. There seems to be no recognition that the brief was fundamentally flawed, requiring significant new development on the cluster of sites, no protection of neighbouring historic buildings, as not only was the existing parking required to be re-provided, but all the new development also had the maximum standard applied. This is a historically important bit of city, damaged by various developments before. It sits on the western side of the walled city and adjacent to a pre-Roman settlement. There seems to be a fundamental disconnect between imaging the outcome and writing a brief. The bid imposed a gateway part through the design stage, which set minimum viability levels, e.g. bidders needed to provide all the accommodation or they would be disregarded. Perhaps commissioning a simple feasibility study to test the brief prior to the design competition would have demonstrated to the council whether the brief was viable in planning and heritage terms as well as financial terms. He added, not only was this a significant waste of time and effort for the architects, but a further impact on the reputation of the City Council to procure good quality schemes for the long-term benefit of the city. Another architect who also asked not to be named said, many firms will think twice, three times, before getting involved with the council. They've made a real mess of things. Council leader Stephen Godfrey acknowledged a problem. It's very easy to get a reputation, but harder to lose it. I acknowledge perception is fact, even if there is no hard evidence to support it. There is a risk that some firms, if they have a choice, may now avoid Winchester because of these problems. The question is, do they have a choice? Councillor Godfrey said the second scheme would see a closer link with the Royal Institute of British Architects. If the council can demonstrate there is willingness to develop a scheme, I think people will see this as an attractive challenge.
Prison failed hanged inmate. A father's rights campaigner found hanged in his cell had, more likely than not, prepared a noose that Winchester prison officers knew about the night before his death, an inquest has heard. Hayden Burton, 42, was found on July the 15th last year, but a jury inquest has found that officers failed to act on a tip-off from a fellow prisoner. At Winchester Coroner's Court on Tuesday, the jury found it is more likely than not that prison staff were informed of Hayden's preparations of a noose on July the 14th. There is no evidence to contradict the testimony given by Jack Murray. The failure to act on this information would have had direct impact on the opportunities to support Hayden. Mr. Murray, a prisoner who is trained to listen in confidence to the concerns of inmates, told the court that Mr. Burton had spoken of hanging himself and claimed he had prepared a noose, information he said he had passed on to officers. The jury also criticised his care and concluded opportunities were missed to reassess his risk of suicide or self-harm. They also found poor communication between staff, managers and healthcare team contributed to his death. Senior Coroner Graham Short said 2015 was not a good year for the prison, adding, "I find that there remain certain issues that need to be tackled which were highlighted by the jury." He said he would not make recommendations to the Ministry of Justice, but list the issues that need to be addressed. In response, a prison service spokesperson said, "We've already taken action and accepted all the recommendations following the Prisons and Probation Ombudsman investigation." Speaking after the end of the two-week hearing, which heard 30 witnesses, Mr. Burton's mother, Maureen Carter, said she felt relieved. She said that the prison service will, hopefully, learn lessons, but tearfully added, "They could have stopped it. Nothing will bring Hayden back." The jury heard how Mr. Burton, who was a member of New Fathers for Justice, was taken to prison on May the 26th last year, charged with two counts of assault, causing bodily harm. On July the 14th, officers put him on a care in custody and treatment plan, as they believed he was at risk of suicide or self-harm. They checked on him hourly. However, at 10 a.m. the next day, in between checks, and whilst his cellmate went on a walk, Mr. Burton hanged himself. He was found by officers just minutes later and was rushed to the nearby Royal Hampshire County Hospital.
Thank you for those. And we're going to read you the death notices now. And I'll start with the first one. Brecken, Phyllis Marjorie Brecken, died peacefully in Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 21st of September.
Cook, Pauline Cook, passed away on the 20th of September, aged 84.
Fancourt, Anne, née Copeland, Fancourt, passed away at home on the 21st of September.
Robinson, Jane Anne Robinson, on the 12th of September, peacefully in hospital, aged 62.
Smith, Frederick Thomas Freddie Smith, born in Dilton March on the 13th of June 1926 and passed away on the 25th of August 2016.
Trod, Kenneth Herbert Charles Ken Trod, sadly passed on the 16th of September, aged 90.
Walker, John Walker of Bishop's Waltham, died 8th of September.
White, Josephine Jo Mary White, died peacefully on 31st of August.
And we're going to have Christian comment now, and Norma will read us. The comment this week is contributed by the Rector of East Winchester, Paul Kennedy. Thanks, Norma.
Angel, help us to hear God's calling. How can we poor earthworms speak worthily of angelic spirits? Asked St. Bernard in the 12th century. So it's with some trepidation that I write on angels today, the Feast of St. Michael and All Angels. Angels remain ever popular, from Christmas tree decorations to greeting cards to New Age festivals, but they are also ever elusive. What are they? Perhaps we understand angels through our own self-understanding and personal reflection. The theologian St. Augustine said God created human nature as a kind of mean between angels and beasts. For Augustine, beasts are driven solely by the instinct to seek pleasure and avoid pain. However, angels gaze on God and their nature is raised by the contemplation of God, the source of all being and love. Our human nature is battered by our animal instincts and our higher calling to gaze upon eternity. The word angel means messenger, and the angelic message is that we are much more than the animal instincts of a tribe or violence and are called to the celebration of love. Christianity does not assume purity. In fact, it abolishes purity. From its founding birth in the smelly cowshed, proclaimed by angels, to the degrading death of a criminal and tomb watched by angels, via prostitutes and lepers, Christianity is the most human of faiths. Our nature between beast and angels is the same nature that clothed God's Son. The battles with temptation and fear are shared by both Christ Jesus and us. It's no wonder that Augustine said, "This is the very perfection of humankind, to find out our own imperfections." There's a tradition of the fallen angel. Lucifer was said to be the most beautiful of angels, his name implying that he shone brighter than those around him. This led to pride and unwillingness to serve God, and instead to dominate heaven. As with the fall of humankind in the Garden of Eden, so Lucifer fell from heaven as Archangel Michael drove him out. It's a profound reflection on the dangers of self-importance and pride. Augustine prayed, "O Lord, help me to be pure, but not yet." That's partly because he was still enjoying his animal instincts, but it's also the realization that purity is not part of the messy, earthy, and bodily reality of Christianity. "I believe in angels," sang Abba. "I believe that we need to contemplate God and the self-giving of his Son." The tradition of angels can help our reflections. Do we need to hear God's call upon our lives? Contemplate with Gabriel, who came to Mary with the news of God being made present in her womb and life. Do we need to understand the power of the gospel to overcome evil? Contemplate with Michael, who drove Lucifer out of heaven. Do we need to acknowledge the power of evil? Surely news from Syria or refugee ships in the Mediterranean shows we do. The story of Lucifer is a powerful warning of a life where only self-love is contemplated. And that was by Paul Kennedy, Rector of the East Winchester, priest in charge of St. Faith's and the area dean of the Winchester Deanery.
Thank you for that, Norma. We have 9 letters for you this week, and Richard's going to start us off, if you would, please. Thank you.
Yes, and the first is entitled "Sorry State." It comes from Mrs. Lucy Hodder. What a mess the local councils are in. At the City Council, Councillor Gottlieb is a fine representative, prepared to question his fellow councillors and advice they receive from officers. The response? Slurs and attempts to remove him. Dare anyone question our own local councillor here in Alsford? Those who've tried to do so in the past have faced accusations of bullying. Is this the standard response of councillors and officers who cannot accept questioning? Councillor Gottlieb had his day in court and won. Arlesford's council's recent history is that of paying out to avoid court cases. I wonder why. How much taxpayers' money have Councillor Griffiths and her band at the council wasted? A sorry state. Mrs. Lucy Hodder, De Lucy Avenue, Arlesford.
And another letter referring to Councillor Gottlieb from Anne and Richard Quick. Congratulations to all those of your readers who wrote such excellent letters to the Chronicle condemning the aggressive behaviour shown towards Councillor King Gottlieb by ex-Chief Executive Simon Eden, along with Council Leader Stephen Godfrey. These amount to 8 in all, with only 1 supporting the Council. We endorse all these 7, but feel even further enraged that not only has Councillor Gottlieb been suspended, but now sacked. Is this democracy? Councillor Gottlieb has shown that his main concern is for Winchester and that the decisions made now must be the right ones to ensure the future of this historic ancient city. He has never tried to seek popularity for himself and now, as the result, finds himself undemocratically sacked. He should be reinstated immediately, while Councillor Godfrey should resign forthwith, thus following the example of Mr. Eden. Only then can the all-important discussions on the future of Winchester be restarted, ensuring that they will meet the demands of the 21st century without losing its appeal as the ancient capital of England. Anne and Richard Quick, Oliver's Battery Road South, Winchester.
Worsening Jams by Paul Brooks. Sir, we have lived in around Winchester for almost 30 years and the problem of traffic congestion caused largely by delivery vehicles of all shapes and sizes has worsened steadily. Today, there were at least 10 white vans in the road behind Boots and Debenhams at around 10 a.m. The aggravation they cause and suffer and the pollution in the centre seems now unacceptable. We therefore tend to avoid visiting the centre of the city if at all possible, and that cannot be good long term. Why does Winchester City Council not run a competition to devise a creative way of fixing this? Give an interested party, say, 3 months to come up with a properly costed and realistic ideas to WCC's criteria on how to solve this. Should all deliveries be banned between 10 and 5 p.m? Should all deliveries be made to one central site and then transported to each shop or destination by trolley? Should all future planning permissions require off-road delivery access? I don't know the answer, but it seems very probable that someone out there does. So why not try it and see? If this has been suggested already, I must have missed it. And that was by Paul Brooks, Pitter Close, Littleton.
Tony Humphreys writes about weighty matters. Sir, I declare I voted to remain, but I assume and am pleased that now we will revert to imperial measurements. 20 hundredweights to the tonne, 112 pounds to the hundredweight, and 16 ounces to the pound. So much more stylish than those boringly logical grams and kilograms. I have misgivings about being injected with fluid ounces. I'm not sure about bushel weights. Townspeople never really understood why a bushel of wheat was supposed to weigh 63 pounds and a bushel of barley weigh 56 pounds. But neither ever quite did. Don't let's worry about it. I don't think we need guineas. They were only introduced to allow professional people to screw us out of an extra 5%. The real joy will come from the Brexit currency. A third of an EU pound was 33.33 pence. Well, not quite accurate then. But a third of an imperial pound is 6 and 8 pence. So much easier and accurate. 20 shillings to the pound is acceptable. 12 pence to the shilling is nicer than those awful tens. but the real pleasure will arise from the introduction of those delicious halfpennies and farthings. So much fun when adding and subtracting. What bliss to deal again in tanners, threepenny bits and half crowns. To help the young, a half crown will be worth 2 shillings and 6p. So much for which to look forward. Tony Humphreys, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
New City Museum, an inspired idea, says Charles Baslinton. What an inspired idea from Sally Heather for a new museum in central Winchester. With Silver Hill planning now imminent again, what better time to commemorate Winchester's plentiful heritage than to include a centrally positioned museum? The city should grasp the opportunity offered and use space to celebrate its histories, pre-Roman, Roman, Saxon, Norman, etc. A world-class museum could bring into one place existing artefacts from where they are now around the city and also establish historical themes that need large spaces to display. Here is a chance to build an architecturally notable building as a civic focus containing a popular cultural attraction and to place the housing and commercial needs of our own times in a setting we can all be proud of. Basingstoke has led the way, producing the splendid Milestones Museum. How much more could Winchester do with its 3,000 years of history? The next big project for Hampshire Cultural Trust? Charles Baslington, The Avenue, Alsford.
Fantastic Festival by Christine Harding. Sir, generally I'm inspired to write to the Hampshire Chronicle. It is to have a moan about something. But not so today. I would like to thank the directors of our first Winchester Jazz Festival for a brilliant weekend of music. I've had great fun listening to some excellent and diverse performances in fantastic venues, ranging from the Theatre Royal to the Corner House and the Railway Inn. OK, I'll come clean. One of the directors is my daughter. But I have seen firsthand how much hard and often stressful work they have put into organising this event for us. So thank you, Anna, Hannah and Louisa, for all your hard work. And here's to many more Winchester Jazz Festivals. And that was from Christine Harding, Coldbrook Street, Winchester.
Karen Barrett notes that parks bring cars. Sir, the rail travellers facing disruption during Southwest Trains' expansion of its car park are those who drive to the station. Those of us who live within walking distance do in fact walk, and many others living further afield used buses. I regret the fact that Southwest Trains and other railway companies do not need planning permission to put extra decks on their car parks. This can undermine any efforts by local authorities to reduce the number of cars coming into cities. It's especially regrettable in a city like Winchester, where the air quality is already so poor, and the station located in a residential area. One of the most contentious aspects of the proposed station approach project was the failure to recognise the importance of having a proper traffic assessment and plans in place before coming up with a development design. Now Winchester City Council has gone back to the drawing board, I hope this can be sorted out. But unless the government removes permitted development rights from the railway companies, there's nothing to stop Southwest Trains building more decks in the future, resulting in more traffic and more pollution. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
James Bristow says, tip tax insulting. As a high-rate band council taxpayer from a rural community, I was shocked to read a sign at the council recycling centre in Bishop's Waltham indicating that as of October the 1st, I will now be charged £2.50 per bag of rubble brought to the site. I use the recycling centre probably 4 times a year at most and tend to consolidate my domestic waste into a trailer over a long term, occasionally including rubble. From a service and contribution perspective, I've already experienced reduced bin collections and a reduction in other community services, while my contributions to the council tax continue to rise. This new tax just adds insults to injury. We already have a massive problem with fly tipping in this area, and I cannot imagine the true cost to the council of clearing this up on a regular basis. With this new surcharge, I can almost read the headlines in the Hampshire Chronicle sometime over the next 6 months. Fly tipping Armageddon hits Hampshire. Post-charge introduction. I cannot understand how a council, Winchester, group of councils, Hampshire, and management team would come up with this policy without projecting the likely implications of a massive surge in fly tipping. The knock-on effect of this clean-up will far exceed the gains to the council revenues, and I have to believe that increases in our council tax to pay for this will ultimately be on their way. There's no common sense and community consideration with the council's approach. Surely, a better way would be to give homeowners a set of vouchers each year, and once these are exhausted, homeowners may then purchase additions. James Bristow, Botley Road, Curdridge.
Rose Giron writes about terrifying walk. So I've recently had to start using a four-wheeled rollator due to the balance problem and other health issues. Being in my 60s, I was loath to do this, but for my safety, I thought I'd give it a go. I went out for my first walk from my home at St Mary Magdalene along Colebrook Street, through Abbey Gardens, ending up at Iceland. The paths, roads and getting onto the roads was a painful experience. The rollator, or my wheels, as I call it, shook and rattled the whole way. Even negotiating the dimples at the crossing was very difficult. The slabs from Sainsbury's onwards to Iceland were so dangerous that huge gaps and different levels. Some shops are difficult to get into because of pavement levels. The pedestrian areas in the high street is a little better for the tourists, I imagine. Walking to and from the cathedral is a nightmare, and walking down North Walls is terrifying. I challenge someone from the roads department to take a walk with me using a rollator. Ros Giron, Colebrook Street, Winchester.
Thank you very much, everyone. That was a lively mixed bag of letters. It's very interesting, all of them. The next item on our agenda is your say. And the question being asked by the Chronicle's roving reporter this week concerns the NHS doctors having to declare their income for private work. And Jerry has the comments of the local people. Thank you.
Which start with a comment from Emily Quick, 16, a student at Peter Simmons College in Winchester. She says, "I think doctors should declare it. People have a right to know." Mark Rowe, 38, unemployed of Wales Street, Winchester, said, "It shows openness and transparency. Ideally, I want my doctor working for the NHS and not privately." Don Lavelle, 30, an artist from Romsey, said, "Yes, I think they should declare it. They should not have agreed to the 1948 contract." Edward Murray, 16, student at Peter Simmons College, who lives in Bassett, Southampton, said, "I think they should say if they're to do work outside of the NHS. They need to make it clear how much they are doing."
Thank you. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. All lowercase and no spaces. news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write. That's to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And editorial comment this week is headed £1 million windfall, a poisoned chalice? Of course, on one hand, the wonderful surprise of £1 million donation to Winchester Church's night shelter and Trinity News Winchester is great news. Both provide a vital service to address serious social problems whose root cause is drug addiction that over the last 30 years have become entrenched across Winchester. In the past, both charities have always walked close to the edge of serious financial problems. It now means that thanks to the generosity of Brigadier Tom Blythe, whose late son Ben was helped by both, the future is looking much more certain, at least in the short and medium terms. But jubilation over such a huge sum should be tempered with the fact that statutory sources of funding are now likely to be sharply reduced, if not cut entirely. The authorities may take the view that the Night Shelter and Trinity can now stand on their own feet. An irony of this is that both charities, which stem from Winchester's long-established tradition of Christian activism, have never relied on state funding. They are set up through a grassroots action in the 1980s. The money from the closure of Brigadier Blythe's DFLOG VQ Trust is another injection of private money. The worry is that in future, the lack of state support could become a serious issue for both. For the memory of Ben, let's hope not. Next we have Westminster Diary, and Steve Bryan is the contributor this week, and Jerry reads it for us, please.
6 years ago, when I was first elected, I said the local NHS would be my top priority. That hasn't changed. What has changed is the cost of drugs, an ageing population, the number of us now living with long-term conditions, and above all, the consumerist view we as taxpayers take of the NHS. Before the last election, the NHS published its own plan, the 5-year forward view, and dared the two parties to fund it in full. I don't think its chief executive, Simon Stevens, expected either to say yes, but the Conservatives did, and an extra £10 million was pledged for the service shortly after the 2015 election. The flip side of the investment was reform, to ensure the NHS can meet every one of the four challenges I outlined, and above all, deliver world-class outcomes when we are sick. And it's in this context the NHS's Sustainability and Transformation Plans, STPs, must be seen. You can be forgiven for not ever having heard of them, but you will, a lot, in coming months. The NHS today helps more people with higher quality care than ever before. Each day, compared to 2010, the service is performing more operations, seeing more people in A&E within 4 hours, and providing more people with access to mental health services. We are employing record numbers of doctors and nurses and delivering innovative treatments, for instance, transformed cancer survival through earlier diagnosis, which would have been unimaginable only a decade ago. Across Hampshire, commissioners, providers and local authorities have come together to decide how we will build on this to improve services in the medium and long term. STPs are not secret, and they're not about cuts. They're about making sure those increased resources, this time, lead directly to better care for patients. I have been regularly briefed on the emerging Hampshire STP, and from the end of October, we can expect a more formal process of consultation to begin locally. There's a huge amount of welcome, from 7-day access to GPs, improving hospital care at weekends, and world-class paediatric care on our doorstep. The difficult parts will undoubtedly centre on the future of acute and emergency hospital care in Mid-Hampshire, as the debate resumes around what services sit between Winchester, Southampton and Basingstoke hospitals. It is here my focus, naturally, is greatest. The NHS is complicated. Its challenges don't fit into 140 characters for a tweet, let alone a cheap 3-word slogan on a political leaflet. I promised the NHS would be my priority, and that means properly understanding the issues we face and the clinical arguments keeping what's best for us front of mind. Whatever else changes around us, that will remain, and I will always keep constituents updated. Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester and Chandlersford.
Thank you, Jerry. it's first person next. George Hayter is the contributor of First Person Item, and he's looking on the dim side of life.
Yep, he encourages us to do so. We're often told to think positive about life's tough challenges, but I've found it's often better to think negative. The accepted wisdom is that if you expect to succeed, it's more likely that you will succeed. For me, the opposite's true. The best results come from expecting the worst. So I urge you, join us pessimists. Who coined the slogan, think positive? You can be sure it was some brainy high achiever completely lacking empathy with those of us in the low and moderate achieving majority. For us ordinary folk, life can be a struggle, from getting up in the morning to getting to sleep at night. We know that the trouble with thinking positive is that it can result in debilitating disappointment. So we embrace pessimism and take comfort from expecting the worst. And it works. Pessimism brings nice surprises. When I went to a wedding a fortnight ago, I dreaded meeting some of my relatives and having to chat with strangers. The ceremony was at 2 p.m. and the revelries were not due to finish for 10 hours. Fear of the event paid handsome dividends for me, with buckets of nice surprise when the reception turned out to be good fun. Whenever I go to a job interview, I always mentally prepare myself for a horrible interrogation by medieval torturers. I imagine that when I enter the interview room, I will be lashed to a spiked seat and abused with pliers and a hot poker. Few interviews have turned out to be that hostile, and I'm sure my relief at being questioned without physical pain has improved my interview performance. It's usually got me the job. Whenever I have to take the 7:42 morning train to Waterloo, I imagine vomiting vandals standing in every carriage as they spray lager over the seats and taunt commuters. Bliss, then, when the train rolls in and I see only well-behaved citizens sitting in courteous order. Setting out for the New Forest on a Saturday morning, I routinely assume all three lanes of the southbound M3 will be lined with traffic stationary all the way to Cadnam. So life is sweet when I find the traffic occasionally inches forward. Pessimism really comes into its own in following sport. Any sensible Saints fan will this season be assuming relegation. Positive thinking readers need look no further than this newspaper column to see the error of their ways. 400 words ago, these rash optimists will have embarked on this article, expecting well-argued prose which informs and entertains. By now it may already be dawning on many of them that they are in fact engaged with inconsequential drivel and meandering muddle-headedness. On the other hand, enlightened negative thinkers will be delighted that at least there don't seem to be many spelling mistakes so far. For its gloomy author, this article is looking like another victory for pessimism. Having started with a heavy heart and learning the feeblest idea for a theme, I am at this stage elated by growing confidence. I think I'm going to achieve the required 650 words. If only David Cameron had had the downbeat attitude that I'm recommending, then he would have anticipated referendum defeat and instructed his lieutenants to prepare for Brexit. And Hillary Clinton would have confessed her pneumonia before voters found out anyway. I don't advocate pessimism for everything. I do like to think positive when it comes to the afterlife. I'm not expecting hell, and neither should anyone. As in most things, a balanced approach is probably best, daring to hope, but preparing for disaster. My thoughts usually appear in the Chron every 4 weeks, so by all means, hope for an incisive commentary on the 27th of October, with all the insight and wit that comes from a writer with imagination and observation. Wiser heads, of course, will expect quality similar to this.
Thank you, Richard. We're going to move on to Bell Garum next, and that's the Hampshire Chronicle's alternative, or could it be positive and negative, points on the news. And so you've got two items, I think, Norma, to read for us.
The first one is, hotel view blocked. Construction has finally started on a new building in Southgate Street opposite Hotel Duval. The tall building replaces a single-storey building that once housed a hairdressing salon. For most people, it will make no difference, but to the Hotel Duval, the new structure will be regretted. It means that a lovely view from several bedrooms across to the cathedral will be gone forever. The founder of the Hotel Duval empire, Robin Hudson, attempted unsuccessfully to, at one point in the dim and distant past, to buy the hairdressers so that the hotel bedrooms could retain the rooftop vista to the great church. And the second one is a plaque for Holmes donor. Winchester is full of the public honouring of great and good. Think King Alfred statue, the plaque in College Street marking the brief stay of Jane Austen before her death in 1817. Belgarum thought it right to highlight a memorial that is well off the beaten track unless you're a student at Peter Simmons College. The plaque in Boscobel Road states simply, "These seven houses were endowed by David Kenneth Murray, citizen of Winchester, who died on the first day of February 1920. Does any reader know any more about this act of generosity? To build a terrace of seven houses in a city today would cost a chunky six-figure sum.
Now we're going to move on to historical items, with the usual mini-news clip starting with 200 years ago. That's 200 years ago, on September the 30th, 1816, a Euro trade row. It is said that 15,000 cotton spinners in the neighbourhood of Ghent have petitioned that the importation of English cotton yarn may be prohibited. Now, our manufacturers of cotton have been, for some time, endeavouring to prevent the exportation of this yarn. Thus, we have the cotton manufacturers of England soliciting the same object with the cotton spinners of Ghent. And probably, on the other side, the cotton spinners of England joining their wishes with those of the cotton manufacturers on the continent. We do not profess to know which would be most beneficial to England, the retention or the continued exportation of this important commodity. The next one is about a bull in the Bull Pub. On Tuesday, as a butcher was driving two bullocks through Buckland, one of the animals, a bull, walked into the Bull public house there and, passing through the tap room into the cellar, laid himself quietly down for about an hour and, having plentifully regaled himself with his own proper beverage, water, he as quietly left the house again, to the great satisfaction of the landlord and his customers, who were, of course, much alarmed at the first appearance of the extraordinary customer. And 100 years from Jerry, please.
September the 30th, 1916. A German airship visited the southern coast on Monday night. She seemed to be merely on a reconnoitering cruise, for she dropped no bombs on any of the places over which she passed. Just before midnight, the Zeppelin was distinguished coming in from the sea. It was exceedingly dark at the time, but within a few minutes, the intruder found the searchlights casting a halo round her. Powerful beams seized her, and their rays maintained their grip until the airship, for as long as she remained. Meanwhile, the guns were loosed. For some 30 minutes, they kept up a furious clatter, and the Zeppelin seemed to be not a little startled by it. Hastily, she climbed to a higher altitude. Speedily, she headed for the sheltering darkness of the open fields. And there's a second item also about airships. In view of the recent activity over various parts of the country of enemy warships, it is well that the public generally should thoroughly understand the reason for the sounding of the horn, which has been provided to give warning to the citizens. The first object of the warning is to acquaint the inhabitants that enemy airships are about, and secondly, for them to see that all lights are extinguished. The temptation for persons to get up and go out for the purpose of ascertaining the facts, and also to try and see a Zepp, is perhaps a very natural one. But if in the course of preparing to go out they should show any lights on their premises, the consequences might be very serious.
And 50 years ago, on 1st of October 1966, road approved. After meeting local objectors, selected members of Hampshire County Council Roads and Bridges Committee have decided that the council scheme for improving the Winchester-Romsey Road between the Straight Mile and the Sun in Romsey should nevertheless go ahead. Their opinion was confirmed at Winchester on Monday when the committee agreed that the improvement scheme should proceed as originally proposed and a compulsory purchase order made covering the land affected. The County Council's stated reasons for widening the road included traffic congestion and the number of accidents on that stretch of the Winchester-Romsey Road. And a second item, drive-in light checks. Southampton motorists will be the first in the West Country to be able to take advantage of the drive-in light testing scheme, which the Automobile Association is running this autumn. Starting on Monday for 12 days, 8 hours a day, they'll be able to call in at the Blymont TA Centre, Millbrook Road, Southampton, to have a complete light check, which is absolutely free and available to all motorists, whether or not they are AA members. In a check that will take roughly 5 minutes, motorists will be able to have their front, rear, brake and direction indicator lights tested and headlights properly aligned to prevent dazzle.
And 25 years ago, on September the 27th, 1991, Federalism attacked. Gerald Malone, prospective Conservative candidate for Winchester, hit out this week at Dutch plans for a federal Europe. He said proposals for the new European Community Treaty, prepared by the Dutch government for the Maastricht summit on the EC's future in December, were little more than back-of-an-envelope suggestions for a historical decision over Britain's future role in Europe. "There is no mood in Britain for an immediate move towards a federal Europe." John Major made it clear he would not tolerate the use of the word federal in the draft EC treaty and to be debated at Maastricht. And the second one is Tower plea rebuffed. Tory group leader John Taylor implored Winchester councillors to stick to the budget strategy and reject a bid to fund the city's Tower Arts Centre. Winchester's Policy and Resources Committee were considering an appeal from the centre off Romsey Road to provide £23,000 to build a new art studio. Mr Taylor said, "It is quite clear you can only spend your money once. Approving the funding of the Tower Arts Centre would be merely a cosmetic exercise in spending money the council did not have." Dr Alan Mitchell also spoke for the consensus when he argued the centre would have to be placed with many other applicants currently waiting for money.
Thank you all for those. And we're now going to move on to what's on after concluding our weekly regular features. Let's take a look now at what's going on in the region over the next couple of weeks. I'm going to tell you about a couple of concerts and then we'd like you to hear about the Poetry Festival, which is going on locally now. Theatre. Well, the Theatre Royal Winchester is presenting a physical theatre item, and they're always wonderful to go and see. This one's called Blind Man's Song. That's on Tuesday, the 4th of October. And then also, if you like jazz, Jackie Dankworth is coming to Winchester Theatre Royal, and she will be singing the great Shakespeare poems. That's on Sunday, the 9th of October. So Blind Man's Story, Tuesday, the 4th of October, and Jackie Dankworth on Sunday, the 9th of October. And the number to call for tickets, if you're interested, is 01962 840 440. 01962 840 440. quite interesting talks and meetings going on at the moment. On Thursday, October the 13th, King John's Lost Treasure, and that's at 100 Men's Hall, the Hospital of St Cross, St Cross Road, Winchester. It's at 7:30 p.m. and it's a talk to Hampshire archaeological dowsers by Stephen K. A. Dawson. King John of England lost lands in France, started a civil war, and lost all his treasures in the Wash. Would it be possible to find the lost hoard? And that's going to be debated on Thursday, October the 13th, in King John's Lost Hall in St Cross Road. And not to leave talks and meetings alone, we've got on Winchester, October the 5th, Ferguson's Gang, the remarkable story of the National Trust gangsters. That's at the Guildhall, Bapsey Hall, in the Broadway High Street, Winchester. It's at 2:30 p.m. and it's a National Trust Winchester Association talk by Polly Bagnall and Sally Beck. That's on the 5th of October at the Guildhall, Bapsey Hall, in the Broadway, 2:30. There are now some interesting items in the Poetry Festival, and Jerry is going to tell us roughly what's been happening, and I'll give you one item that should be interesting for you. Carry on, Jerry, please.
And it sounds very good. A number of free events will take place next month at the annual Winchester Poetry Festival. The festival weekend, October the 7th to the 9th, follows on National Poetry Day on October the 6th and will be celebrating a feast of imagination. Roger McGough, Simon Armitage, Sinead Morrissey, Helen Mort, Joe Shapcott and Bernard O'Donoghue, among many other popular poets, will be reading and talking about their work. There will even be an emergency poet helping visitors find the right curative poem for any complaint. Aspiring poets can also take advantage of special workshops where world-renowned poets share their skills. Winchester Poetry Festival is not just about inviting well-established and world-renowned poets. Its aim is also to be a catalyst by encouraging and stimulating new work. This year, the festival has commissioned poems, both from Simon Armitage and seven regional poets, who were invited to respond to the chalk landscape of the South Downs and whose work will be published by Winchester Poetry Festival in a specially produced booklet. The festival also launched a major open poetry competition, judged by the distinguished and much admired poet Mimi Calvati, and a school's ballad competition. All winners will be announced at events during the festival weekend and their work published in a special anthology. The festival embraces poetry with a connection to Winchester, as well as poetry with a wider European context. With Sasha Dugdale, editor of Bond Poetry and Translation, as artistic co-director, the festival is developing a notable reputation for championing talented poets from around the world. In association with National Poetry Day this year, a translation duel will take place on Saturday, October the 8th, between two of the UK's top translators of German poetry. Karen Leder and Ian Galbraith will read and discuss their translations of the same German poem. "Our aim is to surprise and delight," said artistic co-director Kieran Phelan. To find out more, visit Winchester Poetry Festival, that's all one word, no spaces, lowercase, winchesterpoetryfestival.org.
And just to finish off on the Poetry Festival, there's an item here saying, "Poet brings Belloc into the 20th century." To mark National Poetry Day and Winchester Poetry Festival, poet Charlie Ottley is dragging Hilaire Belloc and T.S. Eliot kicking and screaming into the 20th century. The former bard, Saturday Live, the Today programme, Loose Ends, Radio 5 Live, and Daily Politics will be premiering his one-man show based on his two critically acclaimed books of comic verse. Otley, described by The Independent on Sunday and Country Life as the new Hilaire Belloc, is looking forward to shocking and inspiring audiences in the same room where he used to attend school assemblies. The author of Cautionary Verses and Ruthless Rhymes said, "It seemed the appropriate place to have the launch. I used to spend mornings gazing out of the window and inventing ditties while we listened to sermons or stood there singing hymns. Now I will have the chance to turn the tables. There might even be some live music from special guests." He admits that it's been a while since he trod the boards. His last show, co-starring the poet Nicholas Perry, received plaudits in the Edinburgh Fringe, including 9/10 from Scott FM. That's 9 out of 10 from Scott FM. But Otley is the first to admit his work is not for the faint-hearted. "It will definitely be certificate PG," he adds. Belloc and Raoul Dahl's revolting rhymes were a big influence during my childhood, but so were Derek and Clive. So don't come if you're easily offended. Consider it a journey. The final destination will hopefully be inspiring and uplifting. But like Divine Comedy, is going to get a bit hot along the way. As well as writing poetry and satirical verse for TV and radio, the 45-year-old Titchbourne resident is a filmmaker and presenter for the Travel Channel. His recent work has included writing and producing a series of films supported by and featuring Prince Charles, aimed at protecting and preserving the Carpathian Forest in Romania. This event we've just read to you about takes place at 7 p.m. on October the 8th at the Pilgrims Hall, and the tickets are £10 at the door and includes a free glass of wine. And before we go on to general items, I'll give you the lighting up times. Starting on Saturday the 1st of October, the sun will set at 6:42 p.m. And on Wednesday the 5th of October, the sun will rise at 7:13 a.m. and will set at 6:33 p.m. So Wednesday the 5th of October, sun will go up at 7:13 and will set at 6:33, just to be clear on that. Now we're on to items of general news. Jerry, we'd like your first article, please.
And I'm reading about the £9,000 Cathedral Bible read because one of the readers who took part was Claire Porter, who is normally one of the readers on this team. The marathon Bible reading in Winchester Cathedral raised £9,000 towards its appeal. Around 220 people took part, including nearly 70 boys from Pilgrim School. The youngest reader was Solomon Lawrence, 6, the younger son of the cathedral curate Katie. A group of 15 cathedral friends took on the last 3 hours. Many read on 2 or 3 separate occasions, and a few had to recite their texts as they were moving from the cathedral to the Wessex Learning Centre or back, accompanied by others making sure they kept dry and didn't fall down the stairs. Canon Rowley Ream, acting dean, said, "This was a fabulous community effort and a fantastic total. People were so generous with their time and gifts, and many said how they really enjoyed what they discovered from the Bible, even if Hebrew names proved a challenge."
A war hero dies. A war hero who retired to Winchester has died, aged 94. Major Sam Pask was awarded a military cross in the closing days of World War II in Germany. Over 2 days, he twice took his Sherman tank into heavy enemy shelling and machine gun fire and forced the Germans to retreat. The citation praised his courage, coolness and skill, stating that he had saved many casualties and greatly helped the British advance. He had a hectic war, serving at the Battle of El Alamein in North Africa in 1942 after escaping from a prisoner of war column and returning to safety across the desert, and also taking part in the Normandy landing in June 1944. Major Pask served in the army from 1939 to 1958, before farming on the edge of the New Forest and then moving into antique restoration. In 1997, he moved to Oliver's Battery Road North in Winchester. He married Veronica Cuff in 1951. She predeceased him, and he's survived by their three sons.
Straw Fire Way to bid a fond farewell to Rector at festival. A town scarecrow festival helped to say farewell to the local rector. The Orsford Scarecrow Festival saw dozens of the figures created across the town last weekend. The festival was first held in 2014, but retiring Reverend Phil Collins asked for it to be brought forward a year to mark his departure. One scarecrow was made in the image of his namesake, the 1980s pop star. As well as the scarecrows, there was a weekend of music put on by the congregation of St John's Church, which Mr Collins has served for 14 years. Mr Collins, the vicar since 2002, joined in to sing the scarecrow song from The Wizard of Oz, accompanied by the Sunshine Singers from Sunhill Infant and Junior Schools. Also taking part with the St John's Youth Group and the Sunhill Family Singers. The two performances, organised by Rosie Waring Green, were enjoyed by over 230 people, set amongst a variety of scarecrows as a backdrop. Festival organiser Miranda Pinch said around 40 figures had been created. "We had a lower number, but the quality was superb. The festival was about Phil's retirement, and they reflected that. We had them in East Street, West Street, Broad Street, Mill Hill and Winchester Road. We also had a fantastic farewell service for Phil on the Sunday evening. It was a busy weekend and lots of good fun. A wonderful send-off for Phil." Mr. Collins, 66, said, "The weekend was fabulous. It was such fun. It was tinged with emotion and felt like a roller coaster at times. It has been a wonderful time and we have thoroughly enjoyed our time, and it has been a privilege and a pleasure to serve the people of Orsford and District. I have tried to make the church as accessible as possible. I'm not going because I want to, but it's the right time to go. I have been here 14 years and 42 years in the ministry. Orsford is ready for a change. It is nice to go when things are going well. I'm ready for a change in direction now, and although I don't yet know what it will be." Mr. Collins and his wife Jan, an accredited lay minister, are moving from the vicarage in Jacqueline's Lane to nearby Four Marks. A replacement at St John's is due to be appointed next year. Mr. Collins added, "I am confident that those choosing the next person will find the right person to complement what I have done. His benefice includes the churches of Old Arlesford, Byton and Ovington."
Supporting young carers. The University of Winchester has been shortlisted for a Times Higher Education Award for its work supporting young carers. Approximately 375,000 14 to 25-year-olds in the UK act as unpaid carers for family or friends. Half of those report they are struggling with their studies because of those commitments, and consequently they are four times more likely to drop out of education altogether. "We've always believed that anyone who has the aspiration and ability to go to university should be able to, whatever their background," said Professor Joy Carter, Vice-Chancellor at the University of Winchester. "We know that for some people, such as young carers, that requires a lot of support and encouragement to overcome often very challenging circumstances. We are deeply committed to providing young carers with the support and guidance they need to enable them to get the education they deserve. The demands placed upon some of these young people is immense. I'm delighted the university has been recognised for our efforts and hope it will inspire more young carers to continue with their education. The University of Winchester has played a vital role in advocating and supporting young carers in higher education. This is including contributing to a toolkit aimed at helping other universities support young carers, offering the Dame Mary bursary for young adult carers and acting as exemplar on how it is possible to include young adult carers in access arrangements. One of the students to have benefited is criminology student Fiona Benton, who helps to care for her brother. "My lecturers are aware that I'm a carer and are really supportive," she said. "They have an open door policy, and if I need help, I know they're there. Everyone seems to genuinely want to help you to achieve your potential, and that's what I love about Winchester."
Families say £100,000 thank you. It'll be £100,000 thank you to those who saved their son's life. A year ago, the lives of the Barrow family were turned upside down when 11-year-old Felix was hit by a car close to his Swanmore home. Along with multiple injuries, Felix suffered a severe brain injury and was kept in a coma for several weeks while doctors tried to assess the extent of the damage. Since then, Felix has been on the long road to recovery. After initially being told he may never walk again, he has taken his first steps and been allowed to return home. Now aged 12, Felix has returned to school as he continues to amaze doctors with his progress. He's been helped by the community, who rallied to raise almost £100,000 towards the Fit for Felix Fund, which was set up to raise cash for those who helped save Felix's life and for his ongoing care. Supporters are within touching distance of the fundraising milestone, with more money spinners in the pipeline to reach the amount. It comes as Felix enjoyed his first week at Porchester Community School, which offers extensive support and facilities for youngsters who have extra needs and is fully wheelchair accessible. His mum Vanessa said he was now thoroughly enjoying his new school, which offered facilities to suit Felix's needs. His dad Stuart said the fundraising had also been a positive focus during Felix's recovery.
Winchester Half Marathon. Thousands pounded the streets of Winchester for the city's half marathon on Sunday. The race, the first event of its kind in the city for more than 30 years, took competitors past some historic landmarks and rolling countryside. The event is a partnership between Marathon UK and the same group behind the ABP Southampton Half Marathon, which took place in April, and the Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust, Winchester Salt. The crowds and the sun came out for the event, which has been hailed a success by the organisers. Event director Chris Rees said, "We were absolutely delighted with the response of the first Winchester half marathon in over 30 years. The crowd's support was amazing, and with the hills around Winchester, this route was always going to be a challenge. The event was a huge success thanks to the support of the City Council, University of Winchester and the 350-plus marshals around the route, the residents and, of course, all the runners. We are looking forward to 2017 event already." The 13.1-mile race followed a circular route starting and finishing at the Guildhall and taking in Hursley, Oliver's Battery and the stretch of the Itchen Navigation from St Cross to Wharf Hill.
County's Golden Oldie Cricketers are crowned champions. Hampshire's Golden Oldie Cricketers are national county champions at the ripe old age of 70 years and more. They were crowned top team in the land after beating their Worcestershire counterparts by 48 runs in the final at Trowbridge. In the match, Mike Swain hit an unbeaten 140 and Ian Watson hit 104 not out. The pair set a competition record partnership of 247 in the process. Mike Swain enjoyed a phenomenal season in 70s cricket, pillaging 989 runs in Hampshire's 10 league games. He hit 5 centuries and 3 half centuries during the season. He actually missed one game, away on England duty, otherwise he would probably have topped the magic 1,000 league runs. The former Gosport Borough left-hander also made 223 runs, representing England 70-plus, in their successful 2-1 series win over the visiting Australians. the Hampshire over-70s cricket team were among 11 counties nationwide who competed in the Seavent Veterans 70-plus Championship.
Mayor going extra mile for charities. She's already undertaken a 90-mile bike ride, but the Mayor of Winchester still wants to do more and raise thousands for deserving causes. Councillor Jane Rutter has said she's going to do as much as she can for her six chosen charities. She recently finished her two-day cycle ride of the Winchester District, the first time she'd hopped on a bike for 5 years, and she's now looking to her next fundraising event, a Come and Sing Handel's Messiah, with the Wainfleet Singers at Winchester Cathedral on Saturday, October the 1st. Councillor Rutter is hoping she can raise thousands for charities Combat Stress, Music for All, Home Start, Street Reach and Winchester Youth Counselling. The causes have been selected as part of the Mayor's charities, a selection of organisations that the Mayor will fundraise for during her year in office. She's also a Mayor of firsts. The first tweet, the first to open Abbey House, her official home, to the public, and the first to introduce awards for primary schools. She said, "I'm well into my mayoral year and have given up a lot of my life for it, as you do, and I'm very keen that people invite me to anything they're doing. I'll try to get as many as I can." Abbey House in the Broadway, next to the picturesque Abbey Gardens, also has a resident teddy bear named Ginger, who sits at the head of the table in the dining room. The mayor invites members of the public to visit her official residence as part of at-home events. Visitors will be able to have a tour of the house, take in the views of the gardens, and even have some tea and cake with the mayor herself. Speaking of husband Duncan, during her time in office, she added, "He's been such a support. He works full-time and still comes to all these functions and events with me. He says he goes back to work on Monday for a break. He's been an absolute rock and reminds me every morning why I do what I do. Despite all the fun I'm having whilst raising money for my chosen charities, I'm looking forward to giving Duncan a break when I step down." Many more events are planned for the rest of the mayoral year, which ends next May, including a concert at St John's Church in Alresford. She's even going to abseil down Portsmouth's Spinnaker Tower early next year, at a date to be announced.
Councillor pleased to hear of a green space offer. A Winchester City councillor has said that he is particularly pleased to hear applicants for a housing scheme on a green gap north of Winchester are ready to give up the land. The Welsh family say they are willing to give the council land to protect the gap between Littleton and Harestock as part of their plans for 45 homes. Now local ward councillor James Burns said he would welcome the decision to give the land for public use. In an email to applicant Adam Welsh, councillor Burns said, "At both meetings of the planning committee, I remarked that if you were offering the land in isolation, without any associated development, I could see no reason the council would not consider acquisition. I have always been under the impression that in order to transfer your land to Winchester County Council, you would first need to obtain planning consent for 45 dwellings and a barn for community use, plus associated infrastructure. However, a number of quotes made by your brothers in the Chronicle article of September the 8th have suggested my impression has been wrong. I know that the local community will be glad to have an opportunity to protect the local gap from development and realise full public access to a substantial part of it. And I am particularly pleased that you now seem prepared to make this gesture without leveraging a development at the same time." Mr. Welch has not yet replied to the email.
Dean of Cathedral. The inauguration ceremony for the new Dean of Winchester Cathedral is to take place on Saturday, February the 11th. The news was confirmed last Friday by the Cathedral that the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle will be installed as the 38th Dean in a service at 3 p.m. Ms. Ogle is the current Dean of Birmingham, a position she has held for 6 years. She succeeds the Very Reverend James Atwell, who retired in June. Dean Catherine, who will move to Winchester in the new year with her husband Robin and her son Tom, remains Dean of Birmingham until early January.
And thank you, everyone, for those items of the news. And it concludes our recording for you this week. But before we go, there's another reminder here that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems at all with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. And we like to thank all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of the edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course, many thanks to our readers. Norma?
Goodbye.
Thank you for standing in today. Richard?
Goodbye.
And Jerry?
Bye.
And from me, Roz, until next time, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Thank you very much for listening. Have a good week, and we look forward to reading for you next time.